This is Jeff Blankfort welcoming you to the January 9th, 2009 edition of Takes on the World, a program on international affairs that is now beginning its 19th year on the KZYX and KZYZ airwaves, coming to you live on the second and fourth Wednesdays each month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to get your takes on the world. Back in 2017, California Democrat Adam Schiff, who now heads the House Intelligence Committee, made headlines by suggesting publicly that what the Donald Trump White House needed was, quote, some adults in the room, end quote, and repeated the suggestion the other day. For Army Major Danny Scherson, it's the adults in the room that are the problem. And he writes, quote, maybe it's time to think of them as the tools of a military-industrial congressional complex that continues to serve up endless war, end quote. At about 20 minutes past the hour, I'll be speaking once again with Major Scherson, an Afghanistan and Iraq war veteran, about his December article on a subject that first appeared on Tom's Dispatch and then was reprinted in The Nation on December 27th, as well as one he wrote yesterday on the tragedy of liberal foreign policy. In the meantime, let's look at some related subjects that have received less than adequate coverage in our national media. Let's start with a part of the first bill of the new congressional session offered by Florida Senator Marco Rubio in the midst of the partial government shutdown. Numbered S1, it appeared intended, noted Time, to drive a wedge between the centrist and liberal Democrats over attitudes toward Israel. The bipartisan package, the creation of Israel's Senate point man Maryland's Ben Cardin and backed by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, had reportedly drawn widespread support ahead of Tuesday's vote. Some Democrats are critical over the addition of Rubio's, quote, combating BDS Act, which would penalize any company or contractor that adhered to the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement targeting Israel, varieties of which have already been approved by 26 states, including California. Incoming Palestinian-American congressional representative from Michigan, Rashida Tlaib, who you may have heard on Democracy Now! Yesterday, upset the Jewish political establishment when she suggested lawmakers pushing legislation should study the U.S. Constitution and learn about this country's First Amendment rights. This, for her critics, was tantamount to including the legislation's supporters of having dual loyalties, an accusation that would have arguably been justified, but it was not what she had said. But just consider for a moment what it means when on the very first day of a new Senate session, even without a government shutdown, that the first piece of legislation introduced was clearly intended to benefit a foreign country. That's something it'd be worthwhile for Bob Mueller and the Justice Department to investigate. For the moment, amid the partial government shutdown, the package is almost certain to stall, since Democrats say they will block it until government is reopened, as they did yesterday when Rubio introduced it. It seems that even Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, one of Israel's most unabashed supporters in the Senate, opposes acting on the legislation at this point, a senior aide who spoke on conditions of anonymity told Time. Other Democrat senators who also support the bills were apparently following suit yesterday. There's another aspect of the S1 legislation that has hardly been mentioned by the media, and not for its lack of importance. It would codify into law the Obama administration's $38 billion 10-year arms package to Israel, which had been blocked from being voted on during the last month of the last session by a hold placed by Senator Rand Paul, which was reported only in the Israeli and Jewish press and on this program. Such codification is deemed necessary by Israel and its supporters in Congress to ensure that the yearly gift of $3.8 billion minimally could not be tampered with by the whims of a U.S. president not so enchanted with pleasing Israel and its American donors as have been our current and previous three presidents. It may, I suspect, have something to do with shielding Israel from repercussions stemming from a questionable moves in the international arena that appear to be a direct challenge to U.S. policy, one which you probably haven't heard of or read about that qualifies as something more than questionable in U.S. eyes, is a 25-year deal that Israel has made with a Chinese company to expand and operate the port of Haifa beginning in 2021 that has disturbed Washington, as one might expect, and more immediately the U.S. Navy, which routinely uses Haifa as a friendly port. According to the Israeli press, the main stakeholder in the Chinese company, the Shanghai International Port Group, is the Chinese government. The Haifa port also sits close to Israel's Navy base that is home to the country's nuclear-armed submarine force. The Israeli government reportedly is working to defuse any problems that may arise from the Chinese takeover of the port, which has led the U.S. Navy to reconsider its future port calls and exercises in and with Israel. Israeli officials confirmed to the Jerusalem Post that the government was conducting an internal review to see how this arrangement occurred, as if it was the result of some accidental oversight, and reviewing how to ensure that, quote, the Chinese construction and the management of the port does not adversely impact ties with the U.S., end quote. Commander Kylie Rains from the U.S. 6th Fleet told the Post that there were currently no changes to operations in Israel, but he said, I can't speculate on what or might or might not occur in 2021. White House officials confirmed to the Jerusalem Post that John Bolton raised the Haifa port matter when he met Monday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but apparently it was not considered an important enough story for our national media to mention. Regular listeners to Takes on the World are used to hearing many such stories that clearly Israel's domestic lobby prefers the American public not to know about. The background of John Bolton is another example. Never is it mentioned that Bolton, President Trump's national security advisor, appointed to the post at the urging of Republican mega-billionaire Sheldon Adelson, was hailed by Israel's ambassador to the UN as, quote, the sixth man in our office, end quote, when Bolton was ostensibly his American counterpart serving there. Only rarely are we reminded that Bolton was only in that position through a recess appointment by President George W. Bush when it was clear that he couldn't get approved for the job by a Republican-controlled U.S. Senate. Last November, also ignored by the mainstream media, was Bolton being honored with the, quote, Defender of Israel Award by the ultra-right-wing Zionist Organization of America, which not coincidentally had led the lobbying campaign to oust Bolton's predecessor, H.R. McMaster, as National Security Advisor. McMaster's support of the nuclear deal with Iran and his having referred to Israel once as a, quote, occupying power clearly overrode any other qualification he might have had for the job. It was therefore fitting that Bolton made his statement overruling Trump's promise to begin withdrawing troops from Syria while sitting with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu in Jerusalem on Sunday, since Netanyahu had expressed his opposition to the withdrawal and was, of course, the fiercest opponent of the nuclear agreement with Iran, even being allowed by the Republicans to speak against it to a joint session of Congress. Iran, of course, remains a primary target of Netanyahu, Bolton, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, not to mention the president. Pompeo surely earned the Chutzpah Award for January by saying that U.S. policy toward Iran, just the other day, speaking in Washington before embarking on an 8-day trip to the Middle East to reassure America's allies that the U.S. was not retreating from the region, and while not saying regime change is U.S. policy in Iran, he told Bloomberg News' Eli Lake, quote, the charade of Iranian democracy is what we are hoping to fix. We want the Iranian people's voices to be heard. We want the government to be responsive to those voices, end quote. This August will mark the 65th anniversary of the overthrow of the democratically elected Prime Minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, by the CIA under Kermit Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's grandson, which ushered in 25 years of tyrannical rule by the Shah Reza Pahlavi, a crime far more devastating for the people of Iran and for the region at large than either the bombing of Pearl Harbor or 9/11 was for the people of the United States. No, not even close. And we are on the threshold of doing it again, leading with crippling economic sanctions, with no more consequences apparently than last time, and it being done out in the open. What was Mossadegh's crime back in 1954, you may wonder? It was nationalizing the country's oil industry and reserves, which were then being exploited by the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, which was BP. The same year, we see the overthrow by Washington of another democratically elected president, Jacobo Arbenz, in Guatemala. He had the temerity to nationalize United Fruit and distribute land to the peasants, which President Eisenhower and the Dulles brothers, one the Secretary of State and the other the head of the CIA, saw as a threat to America's regional interest, which democracy in our hemisphere has always been. Finally, one of the unforeseen side effects of the shutdown of Washington is that U.S. aid to Palestinian Authority security forces is under threat of defunding. According to sources in Washington, the Palestinian Authority's forces, who collaborate closely with the Israeli security establishment in suppressing resistance to the occupation in the West Bank, may be forced to operate without U.S. assistance if the shutdown persists beyond the next 2 weeks. Additionally, the Anti-Terrorism Clarification Act, which you probably have never heard of, which became law in October, states that international entities that receive any foreign assistance from the U.S. will become vulnerable to lawsuits filed by U.S. citizens in American courts. The law seeks to allow American citizens who were victims of attacks by Palestinians to sue the Palestinian Authority for reparations. Previous attempts to file such lawsuits were blocked based on the argument that the U.S. judiciary doesn't have jurisdiction over the Palestinian Authority, but now we have learned, have we not, that the U.S. believes it and acts as if it has jurisdiction over the entire planet. The new legislation would seem to provide the Palestinian Authority with a clear incentive to stop receiving U.S. security assistance, as even accepting a single dollar from Washington would open it up to lawsuits. The Trump administration became aware of the problem only after it had been signed into law. It has since been trying to work with Congress to amend the legislation so that it won't prevent the Palestinian Authority from continuing its poisonous collaboration with Israel. In case you might be wondering, the bill passed the Senate by a voice vote in August and was approved by the House without a single objection in September before the president signed it into law in October. I could find no mention of it in the mainstream U.S. press. This has been Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.